Welcome to Conrad's Corner. From time to time, I do interviews with local poets. My interview today is with Gary Michener. Hi, Gary.
Good afternoon, I guess, at this point.
And your background as poet, as writer?
Well, I first started writing, I guess, in high school. I wrote one poem. It was published in the high school magazine, so I guess I thought I was a poet at that point.
Do you remember the poem?
No, I don't. I just remember that it was very bad.
Okay.
As I look back on it. But I met Wendell Berry and Hollis Summers when I was a freshman.
Wow.
And they influenced me, and so that's basically why I started writing. And I started writing actually a poem about a social realist 30s painter named Philip Evergood, and I won first prize in the college contest, and so that sort of validated that I was an okay poet.
And then were you an English major?
I was an English major. I knew in the 10th grade in high school that I wanted to be an English professor.
And where did you go to college?
I went to Wilmington College, just down the road.
And then you became a professor? How soon?
My first job was in high school, and I taught poetry in high school, and I had the students make up their own poetry magazine. So,
good. And was that around here?
Yes, I was in Dayton. And then after that, I went back to graduate school at the University of Michigan. Loved Ann Arbor, but I still took poetry. Then I came back and started teaching in Dayton at Sinclair.
And you were at Sinclair for?
For at least 40 years, because after I retired in 2006.
I taught at Wittenberg for 30 years, and I used to say when people asked me how long, I said too long.
Too long.
Was that too long for you?
No, everybody thinks I retired too early. I decided I would retire when I turned 60.
And you still teach poetry?
Yes, I still teach part-time.
I've often wondered, actually, I never taught creative writing because somehow I didn't think creativity could be taught.
Well, I always tell my students that the first day, I cannot teach you to be creative, but I can do the writing technique part.
And basically, you taught writing technique.
Yes. My teachers, I had great teachers, and I could talk about my teachers, but they always made me write formal poems. I remember studying with Michael Harper, and he said, you're going to write a Petrarchan sonnet. So I wrote a Petrarchan sonnet, but being sort of a wisecrack myself, I wrote about Petrarch and Laura. So I suppose if he had assigned us a Shakespeare sonnet, I would have written about Shakespeare and the Dark Lady or whatever.
Okay. And do you still teach formal poetry, or do you now teach the informal, the free verse?
No, I still think that it's important to teach the formal structures. So, yes, I have my students write sonnets and sestinas and villanelles and pantoums, iambic pentameter.
And do you try to teach informal poetry?
And then we do free verse, of course, and then I do other kinds of structures. But I want to give them that background because nobody really gave that background to me in college.
Well, we've been talking about poetry. I'd like to hear a sample of your own.
Oh, okay. I have a series of poems. I tend to write in series. One of my favorite series is about a character that I made up named Morgan. And so I'd like to read you a poem called Morgan Becomes a Horse. But this is a character, actually, it's E.M. Forrester. Morgan is his middle name. Anyway, it's called Morgan Becomes a Horse. His mother always told him that animals could remind him of unpleasant memories. He knew she was wrong, but not why. Was he in a hierarchy above the dogs which roamed on their country estate? Could he really see a resemblance anywhere in the barns where he enjoyed his one true childhood? He would find out. When he wrote novels, he knew nothing animal-like happened to him, yet they became so many fears manifested, passages and ends. When he looked at himself in the mirror, as he frequently did in secret, dreading that he would be found out, illusion was the magic he needed most to survive. He discovered a peaceful aura around him. And in dreams, he did discover memory, but his mother had been wrong. They were pleasant. In the barn, he tried to talk to the horse. No kinship established. He opened the obliging mouth with new strength, placed his head inside, then climbed farther until he rested there safely, a curious soldier sequestered in his own Trojan trick.
Good. Do you have any intentional structure here other than the line length?
I try to balance my poems. I try to think about stanzaic form. This is not a particular type of poem as such, formal poem, but you will notice that I do keep the same number of lines in each stanza.
Yes.
And I think it's important, what I call the decorum of the poems, how the poem looks on the page.
Okay. And are there any specific echoes or overtones of E.M. Forster other than the name?
Well, the fact that I'm referring to this character as writing novels, and of course one of his most famous novels is Passage to India.
Okay. And you have another sample of one of your creative pieces of poetry?
Well, this occurred when I was in San Francisco, and I went to, I believe, was the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's birth, and it was an exhibit, and I just sort of began imagining what Shakespeare would be doing if he were there in San Francisco. So it's called Shakespeare in San Francisco. The ritual first cut into slain deer was never yours, nor that first blast of the trumpet against monstrous regiments of women. On Castro Street, the knife was yours. The sounds belonged to men. When excesses in apparel were fashioned, you, the upstart crow, cut a figure like paper dolls in squares, not to seem something you wanted to hide, a conceit for your fancy. Mistaken identity you could not take as your own. Where streets did not know you, you flowed, a crowd out of control. How clever to celebrate masquerade, errors you could not correct. No one would know you. No one could keep you off the bay streets. You thought you knew enough, when to seek relics carved from fallen trees, so any decay would have meaning. But towering over you, influential, living redwoods, unlike golden suspensions, a bridge like a net. When plague raged, no king entered through the arches. The hellmouth gaped open, waiting for mortality bills, skulls on the city side of the bridge. Your infection purified by ocean breeze, you went through with no second thought. You never discarded the other side of the mirror, always playing with your reflection. Like Macbeth, all accidents were backstage. You learned no heart rests within the beast, so the word glory mellowed your California discovery.
Thank you, Gary. That is, I think, a very rich poem. I know enough about Shakespeare to recognize a number of allusions and echoes, and I think it shows a very good understanding of Shakespeare as well as a good command of the English language.
Thank you. I remember very specifically that there was a bookstore in Sausalito called The Upstart Crow, so that's where I took that.
Yes, and that was Ben Johnson used that for
Ben Johnson.
Well, you show talent both as poet and reader and also as teacher. So I thank you very much for your contributions here.
Thank you.
Gary Michener.